There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. Literary Spotlight.
So following the passing of Egyptian writer Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq on the 2nd of April, there has been an outpouring of affection for him, his legacy and contribution to Arabic literature. So we thought we'd shine the literary spotlight on him today. With us in the studio, we have Emirati author of science fiction novels, Noura Al-Numan. Welcome to the show, Noura.
Thank you, Annabelle.
And also we have Emirati author and columnist Sultan Al-Zabi. Welcome to the show, Sultan.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you.
And on the phone with us, we actually have Yasmin Khan. Yasmin is the founder and creative producer at Sinbad Sci-Fi, a community devoted to exploring the genre of science fiction across the Middle East, North Africa, South Asia, and beyond. Currently in the first phase of that journey, Sinbad Sci-Fi is encouraging engagement with Arab science fiction. Hi, Yasmin. How are you today?
Greetings. Hello. Pleasure to be on.
So first of all, I just want to mention, Tawfiq appeared at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature last year, and I know that you chaired him in an event, albeit virtually, in a panel discussion in 2015 for a different literature festival. How did he strike you, and what was the topic of that panel? What was being discussed?
So, yes, I had the pleasure of interviewing Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq in 2015 for the Shubak Festival, which is celebrating contemporary Arab art, and immediately, his charisma, his friendliness, his charm, his wit, his very playful sense of humour comes across very quickly. Unfortunately, we couldn't get him to come in the flesh because even then he was poorly. He had a weak heart, although I didn't know at the time how serious it was. But we Skyped him in, beamed him up via Skype in fitting sci-fi fashion, if only there was a teleporter. And he was a brilliant panellist. I mean, he just was so articulate in terms of what he had to say, and it was very powerful and uplifting to hear.
He's often called the godfather of Arabic science fiction. This is a question I'm putting to everybody, but I'll start with you. Why did it take until Tawfiq, do you think, for this genre to really take off in Arabic literature? And what do you think sets him apart from writers he's influenced who've been contributing to the genre since?
I mean, I think it's important to say that he definitely leaves behind a very big legacy, but he does stand on the shoulders of other giants that came before him, and he would cite them as well. I mean, Nabil Farouk is a contemporary. Other people like Mustafa Mahmoud, who was the Carl Sagan of Egypt, came before him in the 50s, who wrote a book called The Spider. But I think what was special and different about him was the way that he tapped into the zeitgeist of the youth. He was relatable, and he was an advocate for social injustice. He stood up against dictatorship and oppression, and he did that really effectively through his work. And I think that is what endeared him to the masses. They read him, they followed him, they stuck with him, and he was loyal to them. So I think in that way there was an ongoing relationship.
Noura, I can see you nodding as Yasmin's talking. Would you like to share?
I'm guilty in that I didn't really hear about Tawfiq before somebody introduced me to him. I was looking for books for my kids in Arabic, because, of course, that's exactly why I wrote what I wrote. And she gave me a bunch of these pocket series of books, and she said, this is great for your kids, they can read it, it's science fiction, it's fantasy, it's so many things all at the same time. And that's when I heard of Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq. Before that, of course, I always thought that there was no existence of science fiction in Arabic. But again, of course, also I had met Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq last year also during the Emirates Literature Festival. We were on the panel together. And yes, what strikes you is his passion for science fiction and the fact that probably, you know, just like everybody else, he was thinking there's so much more we can do for science fiction. And we've just started. I think that was a very optimistic part of what he did.
Sultan, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I myself, I grew up actually reading his work. I mean, specifically the Metaphysics Pocket series. I don't know how can I describe this experience. I mean, it's timeless. Because before that, I mean, I used to watch some science fiction series, I mean, on the television. And I agree with Noura. I mean, there were no material in Arabic until I read this series. I mean, it was actually outstanding and something he had that arresting influence on the readers. You know, I mean, the youth, I mean, they like to, they like comics because they like to read and look at pictures to relate. But his text, I mean, was so arresting that we continued reading for him over the years. I mean, I have all 80 books until now, I mean.
Wow.
Yeah. And actually, this metaphysics series, they are based on horror and thriller. So we used to make a challenge with my friends who could read this on after midnight. Yeah. It was really, I mean, horrible, I mean, and because he dealt with the supernatural and the parallel universes and beings from other parts of the world that were really horrifying but intriguing at the same time.
Yeah. You mentioned you had about, what was it, 80 of his books?
80, yes.
Because that was something that I wanted to ask you as well, Yasmin. I wonder if he spoke to you about this, because by the time of his death, he had over 500 books to his name. Yeah. He was incredibly prolific. Did he ever tell you how he wrote so much?
I think he was just driven by what was around him. One thing we haven't mentioned is that by day he was a medical professor.
Yeah.
So, you know, this was on top of that. And also, I mean, those 500 titles, a lot of them were novellas, and they weren't available on, you know, the official publication markets. There was a big pirate industry, and they're probably not available now, a lot of them. So this is a big call out for the, you know, publishers out there to translate, because unfortunately I've never read the Supernatural series that your speakers just mentioned. I've only read Utopia because it's been translated into English. Mm. But yes, to answer your question, I mean, I think he was deeply frustrated with seeing the poverty around him, with seeing the class divisions around him. And so, you know, he mastered the craft of writing dystopia as an allegory to make a commentary, but protecting himself from censorship and punishment at the same time. So he was ingenious in that way. And the strange thing is that when you talk to him, you get the sense that he's such a gentleman. You can't believe he could write such a grim and bloody novel. I mean, I don't want to give spoilers away. It is very brutal, but not in a gratuitous way. As I said, it's an allegory for what he's seeing around him. And it was eerily prescient because he first came out in Arabic 3 years before the Arab Spring. And so, you know, he's often attributed, you know, as being a really big influence on the youth, on that movement, because, you know, they looked to that novel as, you know, as a template almost. But he was very relieved it wasn't as bloody as he had predicted, although he became, you know, a bit more frustrated later on and anxious about what might happen next. But his legacy is going to endure for sure.
What's really struck me has been the outpouring of affection that we've had for him. So you have authors and also readers commenting on Twitter all over the place about how much they're going to miss him and what their work has meant to him. Ahmed Murad, for example, he said, "Dr. Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq inspired an entire generation. He inspired me and many others more talented than me to believe in writing and to become readers." Would you agree with that?
Yeah,
absolutely. Go for it,
Nora. Hi, Yasmin.
Hi, Nora.
I'll see you in London.
Yeah, it might be a good point to mention that you're going to be seeing Yasmin in London soon.
What for, Yasmin? Would you like to say what for?
So we're looking forward to welcoming Nora Al-Zaman for the MFest. Panel, which is a first festival celebrating Muslim literature and ideas. And Nora will be taking part in a panel called Spicing Up Sci-Fi, The June Strike Back. And we're really excited about that. It's on the 28th of April at the British Library.
Yep. Just taking a moment to say that the title of that event is absolutely wonderful.
Yep.
Oh, thank you.
And I just wanted to say that obviously I've only read one of his books, but I also understood the impact that would have on the content, Arabic content for youth and throughout the Arab world. But what struck me first was the Twitter feed. My timeline is filled with authors and lovers of books, and one of them is Sultan. So I think if I remember correctly, you said, "Goodbye, my friend of childhood and youth," is probably what you wrote, right?
Yes, because that was deeply affecting. I mean, this the legacy, I mean, he left behind Because, like I said, I mean, at the, when I was a teenager, I mean, I lived at the horror of reading his books and these timeless characters. But now I have a horror of not being able to do that anymore. Because, like, the lead character, Dr. Rifat Ismail, that sarcastic old man who had the uncanny ability to fend off all kind of dangers and cheat death, although he's almost on that, almost going there. So I feel the horror now of not being able to relive that experience.
This whole conversation makes me really sad, but also makes me want to read his books over and over again.
Oh, yes.
I just wish that more were translated, but he didn't particularly want his books translated. He was very particular about that. He said in an interview that I think that he was very particular about the translations, and the last one that he was actually working on translating himself, because he was very particular about how things were portrayed in other languages and how they were translated.
The other thing to mention is that he also took the pattern of translating English science fiction into Arabic. I think he did some Asimov's work and some others. So I think, you know, he took responsibility really seriously in bringing sci-fi to the mainstream.
That's about all we have time for now. We are going to return to the discussion. I know that you have to go now, Yasmin, but thank you so much for joining us. And I hope that you have a wonderful time with Nora next week, is it?
Yay, yes. Well, the weekend.
2 weeks.
In 2 weeks.
28th of April. Thank you. Pleasure to be on.
Thanks so much.
Literary Spotlight.
So following the passing of Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq, the Egyptian writer and physician, on the 2nd of April, there's been an outpouring of affection for him and his legacy, and we thought we'd shine a literary spotlight on him today and chat about him. With me in the studio we have Emirati author of science fiction novels Noura Al-Noman, and also Sultan Al-Zabi, Emirati author and columnist. And in the co-host chair, it's Flora Rees, Head of Education, Training and Publishing at the Emirates Literature Foundation. Now, we were talking about his legacy and the outpouring of affection people have had for him, and you spoke very movingly about how you were horrified by reading his books when you were younger, because they were so good and so compelling and so scary, and now you're horrified in equal measure by the fact that you will never have the experience of reading new novels by him. There must be some that you haven't read already, though.
Yes, of course. I mean, I actually haven't read, I mean, a lot of his later series. I mean, the later novels, like Utopia. I mean, I feel guilty, actually, because I've got busier, I mean, in the later years. But I feel compelled now to go back and read. But for his earlier series, I've read them all.
If you want to be horrified as an adult, please read Utopia, because it's just so horrifying.
I've got to do that, yeah.
You spoke about the series that you particularly liked, that featured that character, the doctor, Dr. Rifat
Ismail. Yes.
What is it that, you spoke very movingly about the character, what is it that you particularly like about him, and what captivates you most about that character?
Well, first off, I always wonder whether that character is a projection of Tawfiq himself, because Dr. Rifat is also a doctor. And he wasn't like a superhero kind of character in this 18th volume series, but he had that uncanny ability to solve the mysteries surrounding him and fend off all kind of dangers and cheat death. Still being sarcastic. So all these contradicting features make him really appealing. I mean, also by the end of the book, he had that like a correspondence section where he received letters from real readers, and he'll be answering them like he was a real character. So we actually were always looking forward to the final pages just to go through these letters. I mean,
that sounds brilliant. I love it when authors do that.
Mm. Yeah, it's so interesting.
It's interesting, yes. Yeah.
And then you're wondering, is it the author or is it the character themselves?
Yes, yes. It keeps you guessing and keeps you going on.
Yeah.
So that was really, I mean, amazing.
Utopia is a title that comes up again and again, particularly because it's available in translation. I think it was optioned for film, although I don't know if it actually became a film in the end.
I was looking into that because I saw the option, but there doesn't seem to be any
traction on it at the moment. Utopia, Nora, you've read this one. Would you mind telling us a little bit about it? We know that it's brutal. It's set in
2050,
Cairo, in 2023 or something, I think. Like, I've got the back of the book here.
Yeah, I forgot the date.
So, a grim futuristic account of Egyptian society in the year 2023. It takes readers on a chilling journey beyond the gated communities of the North Coast, where the wealthy are insulated from the bleakness of life outside the walls. But people don't stay inside the walls, do they? This is kind of the horrific part of it. Kind of that they've got so used to the luxury that they're bored of it, aren't they?
Yes, they've become really jaded. And of course, the first thing that strikes you is that even though it's called utopia, it's actually a dystopia. Because inside of the city, everything that you dream of and you want is available to you in a very sort of filthy, rich kind of environment. But outside of it, it's hell on earth. People actually eat dog meat, because they can't find anything. It's chaotic. It's a dystopia. And these two characters, the boy and the girl, I read it such a long time ago. I'm sorry if I can't remember the entire story, but I remember the plot of these two characters who have gotten really bored with their life. And they decide to go out of the security of these walled enclaves that they live in, which is Cairo, which is in Cairo. They somehow meet up with a young man who is, even though he has lived in this dystopia for all of his life, he decides to help them. And the innocence and naivety in that is contrasted by the fact that even though these two people, the boy and the girl, who live in the best conditions possible, have zero respect for life and have total contempt for him, he's an insect to them. So even though he saves them, at the end of it, nobody really survives, but it is the sparking off of riots and maybe change, and not necessarily good change, but it's change. So in the end, I just wanted to slash my wrists and die, which is why it's so horrifying. But then at the same time, I tried to be fair, and I was thinking, you know, not everything ends well, and not all stories should have a happy ending. This is life. And with all the, you know, the slang of Egyptian vernacular, is just, it's gripping, and you're thinking in a couple of years it's going to happen, and it's only, I mean, in the book it's only a quarter of a century in the future.
I think you spoiled it for us.
Yes, I did. I'm sorry, Sultan. Oh, don't have to read it anymore.
To be fair, from the back of the book, and also as you're reading it, there's no doubt in your mind that it's not going to have a happy ending.
Really? I thought it would. It would. I don't know. Maybe it's my science fiction kind of... Yeah.
Do you think that that's also how he broke the mold of the genre, in that he defied any sense of hope? Because do you think that the novel is devoid of hope?
It is devoid of hope. But maybe, you know, sometimes... you have to, as they say, break a few eggs to make an omelet. Maybe that spark would means that there's going to be hope, but you don't really know. But again, he is writing it of this society, this region, where right now we're going through so much despair, and you're thinking there's absolutely no end to this misery, and there's no end to these wars, etc. So he was being realistic at the same time. But I remember reading, maybe a couple of years ago, that somebody saying that he wasn't writing a science fiction book, he was writing a horror sort of realistic book.
Yeah.
So he may not have seen it as science fiction.
Yeah, horror is a genre that comes up quite a lot when you're looking at Tawfiq's work. It's kind of, they say, medical thriller / horror / science fiction. Yes. Like, he fits multiple categories.
And he's written a lot of those, maybe? You know,
no,
medical horror?
Yeah, but not in that sense. Yeah. I mean, it seems to me like it's the pinnacle of his career work.
Yes.
When I was
maybe
reading,
he wanted to end it that way.
Maybe.
Yeah.
One of the things that came up when I was reading about him in interviews was that he had no interest in doing the same thing over and over again with his work. He always wanted to try and change the structure of his work, so break boundaries and do something different. It sounded like he would have been bored of doing the same structure for a book, so he would start in different places, he'd try different genres, he'd have a supernatural element in one part of a trilogy and then not in another.
That's great.
So I think what we're going to miss is probably the variety of Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq, yes, as well. I've got some quotes of his that I'd like to read out because they're brilliant. I've got three quotes here. So he said, "I don't fear death, I fear dying before living." Yeah. And he said, "When I die, I want my tombstone to say, 'He made young people read,'" which I think he definitely achieved. Absolutely. That's one of the things we've spoken about today. One of his readers actually left one of his books and a note saying that at his tomb as well. And the third one here, which I thought was very funny, "Thinking that the world will be nice to you because you are a kind person is like thinking the lion won't eat you because you're a vegetarian."
True.
So that's Ahmed Khaled
Tawfiq.
And
is it true he predicted the date of his death?
What?
Yeah,
no.
I don't know. I read that
somewhere.
Yeah,
we don't know if it's true
not sure,
or not.
I mean, yeah.
I think it was on the, it was one of his characters who's saying, "I expect my death to be on April 3rd or something
I think, yeah.
And that was the day that he died.
Do, do, do.
That is the appropriate
theme
right now.
We'll never know.
So one other thing that I wanted to talk to you about was, I mean, Nora, you said that you read his books after you'd already written your science fiction, but that a lot of the people that influenced him influenced you.
Arthur Clarke and I mean, I didn't really read a lot of Isaac Asimov, but all of these people who make you think that the sky is no longer the limit, you can write about whatever you want to write, and then experiment with so many things. I think when we listen to people like Sultan, and in my case, because I'm older than him, I was also a fan of also Pocket series of books, which was based on the famous five. It was called the Mughamirin al-Khamsa. Those were the things that make you wait, you know, breathlessly for the next installment. Maybe that is what Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq and myself aim to do, and I've always dreamed of this huge line queue of young people standing at a bookshop waiting for them to open up very early in the morning because they are waiting for their next installment of what they love. And that is what maybe Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq and I learned, the suspense, the wonder.
That's a wonderful note to leave the discussion on. Can you just let people know where they can get hold of your books? That would be a really lovely way to end the show as well. So, Sultan, where can people find your books?
Well, my books are available in Borders and Dubai distributor libraries, mostly.
And if you could recommend one title?
One title? Well, that'd be my first, I mean. My first
true
title.
And they're only available in Arabic for...
It's in Arabic now, yeah. It's called When a Woman Aspires. It's about the woman, Emirati woman empowerment, I mean.
And Nora, your books are specifically for a reason only available in Arabic, aren't they?
Yes, for a reason. I guess just like Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq. But really because of the reason that there is so much content out there in English, but there isn't enough in Arabic. So it's available in Arabic. Ajwan is book one. Book two is Mendan. Book three is Saydonia. And they're all also, again, available in distributors in Borders, Kinokuniya, and Magrudis also. Magrudis have them. Wow, how could I possibly forget Magrudis?
Thanks so much to both of you for joining us on this Literary Spotlight discussion on the work of Ahmed Khaled Tawfiq. It's been a pleasure talking to you both.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.